Shall we start again? Could you tell me who your mother and father were, Mrs. Barnes?
Well, not that it matters, but I don't like my family. They don't like me, you know. My mother and father, my mother died in 1910, and my father died in 1935, so there's no need to bring them in. Mm. I mean, just an ordinary family.
Mm. My father had a
business, but we were comfortable too.
Were you? Yes. You were better off than most people?
Than most people.
Mm. Mm.
My mother had, you know, her own, like, income.
Mm.
Well, coming from the school, going back to the school,
yes.
I asked my mother, I said, could I bring these one home for dinner?
The orphan children?
The orphan.
Yes, yes.
And she said, yes. And then mother gave us a pocket money and that, you know, little things.
Mm.
We were sorry for them, you see.
Mm.
I couldn't bear to see them, no mother and father. And they seemed lost, these children.
Mm.
That was my first impression, you might say, in economics.
Without reading any books.
Yes. And as I went along one day to school, I saw a family being turned out. The bailiff was there. I didn't understand what it could be. The children, two children, crying, ran the mother, wanted to go indoors. And then the furniture was being brought out. And there was a man there, I understood afterwards, a bailiff with two men cleaning them out because they couldn't pay the rent.
Mm.
And they used to have to go in the workhouse, see? Well, all these things and the poor people around impressed me very much. I couldn't understand why it should be.
And you were better off, so you were used to something different.
I couldn't see. And so, anyhow, all my school days, see, I was always thinking about this. Well, there's people have everything, and why these people? And if they want work, why can't they get it? I had no idea. But eventually, I began to understand.
Your kettle's boiling now, so we got you to school. And
I was impressed from the beginning.
Yes.
And I sort of gave me that feeling that I must do what I can, you know. And I studied, I did well at school, elementary.
Yes, it was a board school, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
And
Marlin Road.
I got on, well, at Harper Street, Marlin Road.
Yes.
I got on well, and the headmistress said I should go in to be for a teaching profession. Well, I was very pleased about it, but my mother was taken ill, and we're a fussy family. We're very fussy about food. We don't have strangers, you know. You understand what I mean?
Mm.
And I had to give up school to do the cooking and that. We had a daily woman, but she wouldn't see. So I left school 1902.
How old were you, Mrs. Barnes?
In my 16th year.
Were you? So you stayed quite a long time at school.
Yes.
Mm.
Because I was being coached by the headmistress, see?
She took you under her wing,
yes.
Yes.
Very nice.
Mm.
And it was a the biggest blow I ever had. But what could I do?
You wanted to be a teacher, did you? I mean, you liked
it. Well, yes, but I couldn't carry on because it was my duty to look after my mother. See? And mother was ill for... She died in 1910, so that was 8 years she was ill. And, well, of course, when she died, I had to look after the family and so on until I got married. And then, but before I got married, I got to know friends who belonged to the ILP, Independent Labour Party.
Yeah.
And I joined almost before I was old enough. And from that, I've never let anything, you know, when I see anything, I must find out a remedy and, you know, all for the people. But the terrible thing was the appalling poverty in the East End. When Sylvia came to see the... they were Manchester family, and they were friends of Keir Hardie, Dr. Richard Pankhurst. He was a barrister. Well, there were three girls. Christabel, she became a barrister. Sylvia became an artist. Adela became a teacher. Well, and they then... Dr. Pankhurst, they started the Vote for Women in Manchester. Mrs. Pankhurst went all over the country. And, well, there came, Dr. Pankhurst died in 1897. In 1905, the family came to London. And would you like
No, it's fine, thank you.
They came to London and they stayed at Lincoln's Inn with the friends Pethick Lawrence, who became Lord Pethick Lawrence.
Yes.
And he was life governor of the London Hospital. And they stayed with them, you see. Well, they carried on the campaign here, Vote for Women. All the well-off women, educated women and well-off, you know, the elite, they joined Mrs. Pankhurst, providing they didn't want the working women to have the vote. So on that question, Sylvia, she was the only one who carried it on in her father's footsteps. She was a socialist. But the other two agreed. Well, there was a quarrel. Sylvia quarreled with her mother. No, she says, you're going in the East End. So the mother said, what, that slum area? It's dirty and, you know. She says, that's just what I, not only the vote, I'm going to help those people. See, that's a socialist principle. So she broke away. I can't tell you the date.
It was 1913, actually, when she broke away. To make the East London Federation, you mean?
Yes, well, yes. I don't know the date. I never kept a diary.
No,
see.
No.
And so she came to the East End. She had rather hostile reception at first because the people were prejudiced against women having the vote, you see. And, well, it's a funny thing. The first introduction I had to the movement was, I was at I'd been shopping and I'd been with friends and I was coming home. And there was a meeting on a street corner near where I lived. And I thought, I could hear women talking. They were on a cart. Lansbury used to lend them a cart, see? And then they used to call for it, the men, when they finished 10 o'clock. And I thought, women shouting about sweating conditions, women had to work underground, basement rooms, less than penny of, oh, I forget now, it was all sweating shops. They were going to do away with that. They were going to help the people, and they were going to. So that interested me. I thought, hello, I'll go and listen. So I listened. And men were shouting all sorts of nasty things at the women. Go home to your dirty kids. clean your ass. And I thought, that's terrible, you know. Of course, no one was in favour of women having votes, even the women, at first. Well, I stood there listening. Presently, there was a crowd there of men shouting, mostly men. A small man came along with the Gladstone bag and the Truby hat. And we knew a man who had a Gladstone bag and a Truby hat. He was a city clerk. That was there.
The uniform.
Yeah. So he made his way through the crowd right up to the... Sylvia wasn't there, because I discovered after she wasn't there. And he went right up, he said, you, he said, you are inferior to men. Go home and do them, you know. So the speaker listened. And so she said, please, just do me a favor. Keep silent for 1 minute. Just give me time to tell you what our friend has just said. So, you know, and then they kept quiet. And so she said, she repeated what he said. And she said, now I ask you, how can an inferior give birth to a superior? And that was my first introduction. And then, the end of the meeting, the lady, the last speaker, there were four in the band, she said, is anybody here would like to help us in our work? It's very important work. We're going to change everything. The women are entitled to have peace and more, more money. Said, anybody here who's prepared to help us, come give their name and address. So, see, and that was my...
That was how you joined?
Joined. Mm. And then I got a notice from 400 Old Ford Road, that's where Sylvia had taken up residence.
The headquarters,
yes. Yeah, at 400 Old Ford. And then she welcomed the new recruits. It was only me that time. Excuse me. So she said, I must warn new recruits that unless they're prepared to face whatever, you never know what you have to face, and be brave and not to give in, you're no good for us. So I thought, well, I thought, a bit nervous, first meeting. And anyhow, I wouldn't... I carried on and I'm attending meetings and all that. And then one meeting, she wanted a volunteer to go to the top of the monument and throw over leaflets, that's for women. But of course, says, you've got to be very quick to avoid the police because they'll be waiting for you at the bottom. So I thought, well, I'll take that job on. And that was my first job.
So you went to the top of the monument and threw the leaflets down?
Yes, oh. I had two, I was strong, you know, I was young. Two carrier bags full of leaflets. Says, as quick as you can, throw them over. And, well, I did. And I had a job to get up to the two bags, you know, the spiral staircase. And I couldn't get there quick enough. I left the carrier bags up there. Good job I did. When I got down, just coming out, two policemen got you red-handed. Me? What do you mean? Said, you've been up there to throw... Where? I couldn't go up these stairs. In the end, they believed me, they let me go. So I said, I was just passing by, and I just looking up, I couldn't go up those stairs. Who's up there? I said, I don't know. I haven't been up there. So, one of the older policemen, there were two there, said to the other one, go up and see who's there. You sure? I said, of course I'm sure, I don't know. So, of course he said, gone. So, I walked round the corner, and when I got round there, I didn't fly.
But you got them all off the top.
Yes.
All of them. Yeah. That's interesting.
You know, enthusiasm.
So what did you do next, Mrs. Barnes?
Well, doing all sorts of things, see. Oh, I couldn't tell you in a day. Not me, the whole thing. So... anyway, the next lot was, when was Asquith, not Asquith, yes, he was a member, he was a Prime Minister. And at the meeting there she said, I want somebody to volunteer to be, to go in a crate and seal that in, like, and to be, we wanted the crate to go to the Essex Commons because the suffrage we made such a terrible, they wouldn't let anybody in, you see, after that, because we used to. So, of course, I couldn't volunteer for that because mother being, you know, not there, and I had to, my family, you know, my brother and sister, I'm the oldest one, yes.
How many did you have actually, Mrs. Barnes?
Well, there's several.
Quite a lot of them. Were there really? And they were younger than you?
Oh yes, all younger.
So you had to look after them?
Yes. And although we had a escape and that, but you know, it was like the family, we're close-knit, see. Anyway, I couldn't take on anything that really would get me into trouble because I couldn't afford the time, you see. So, well, the crate was there and I thought, padded with straw and then the other things. And this woman, she volunteered, one of them volunteered, and gave an exhibition of laying it. And then be, but she could get out, see. And it was to get near the Commons. And that was the only way. So it was labelled crockery with care. A tradesman's entrance, the Essecombe. So he was taken in, put in a storeroom. So in the night she got out and she went up the gallery. See? It was all arranged. And when the Parliament sat and this Asquith at his table, whatever, with all his papers, Prime Minister, there's a big bag of flour landed right on top of him, all over. It was all over the newspapers the next morning.
Were you watching that, Mrs.
Oh, Barnes? No.
You just heard about it?
No, I saw the papers next day.
But you were in on it all, you knew about it.
Oh, I knew about it, yes. But watching the papers and I saw Asquith covered in flour. Oh, Sylvie was a marvellous person and brave. Oh.
Well, she starved herself, didn't she, and went
Oh, she went through hell in prison. 17 times and they tried to forcibly feed her, see, and I've seen her with her face all swollen and terrible. All they went through, they all did. And now the police were truncheons. The government didn't mind, see. And they went right and left. Me not being tall, I used to dodge when we were on a march, see.
Did you have a position in the branch? I mean, were you an official or...?
No, I was just an ordinary... I couldn't afford to be an official because I'd have to do a lot more and it would... It was my family, I wasn't free.
Yes, yes.
See, I had to do my duty.
Yes.
And no, I never was helped, but there were plenty there. Well, Sylvia had the bodyguards.
Bodyguards. Who were the bodyguards, Mrs. Barnes?
Well, I couldn't. One was Ethel Smythe, and there were so many, Seeley something, or. I've forgotten names.
What sort of people were they? Were they the stronger
ones? Well, they were
ones,
like
ones?
Sylvia, fighters in the movement. Now, I'll give you an instance. We had, you wouldn't know, Bromley Assembly Hall in the Mile End Road, Bow. We used to use that because that was in Bow where she lived, see, Old Ford Road, Bow. And... always, we had lots of meetings there. Well, she was going to speak there, and all of us who had time, who'd go and chalk the pavements, come and hear Sylvia Pankhurst at Bow Assembly, Bromley Assembly all tonight, so and so. Well, I remember she was out from prison, was out on the Cat and Mouse Act, you know, that was...
When they could re-arrest them.
Arrest them, because they let them out because they went on hunger strike, and they had to let them out. But they mustn't take part in anything until they finish their prisons, you see. So the police were hunting them everywhere. But she used to always get in disguised. And, I can picture it now, it's all come back to me. We knew that she wouldn't be able to attend. We had this meeting, you see, and I thought, how can she get there? Come and hear, on the pavement, chalk, come and hear Sylvia Pankhurst at Bromley Assembly Hall tonight. I thought, how can she get here? Because there were, lots of police outside, horseback, and on foot. You couldn't get in without crowds of police. And of course they were watching for her, see. Anyway, all at once, she appeared on the platform.
How did she do it?
Oh! We went mad. The hall was full, always full. And of course the people she got loved. She didn't only do work for the vote, she helped a lot of people in the East End. And when they found what she was doing, they loved her. I've never known such wonder and excitement in the East End. Anyway, she appeared on the platform. And of course the people went mad, because she was not supposed to be there. Then presently, we found out afterwards that she came in, borrowed a baby, somebody was and carrying a baby with a funny old bonnet disguise, see? So she got in easy. And of course that was only one meeting, one of the...
How did she get out though? How did she get out?
Well, she got out. I'll tell you how. All at once, of course, the police soon got the know outside that she was there. So there must have been detectives inside. So all at once, the back of the platform, two or three men appeared. And we knew at once they were detectives. They were coming on to get Sylvia, see? So when we realised, jump, Sylvia, jump, jump, Sylvia, jump. So Grant caught hold of her and put in her ear, changing that so they didn't know when. Anyway, in the meantime, while this was going on, one of her bodyguards, I knew her name, I thought of it the other day, I can't think.
Not Zelie Anderson, was it? Wasn't Zelie Anderson, was it?
No,
the American?
No, well, she was one of them, but while all this commotion, because the people were, you know, so the police say, where is she, which is it, when didn't they change it at? It was a riot. And anyway, one of her bodyguards got the adrenaline and put the hose on the police out the window. And then, of course, the horses reared up and the police were in there. And in that commotion, she got away. Yes. Ran the corner, Willie Lansbury, Lansbury's eldest son, was waiting for a van. If she could get away, she'd get on the van and off. That's what happened.
And she got away. Good Lord.
Oh, it was exciting. And the same happened here. If you have to pass, if you go along the main road here, Canning Town, public hall. Same thing happened there.
Did it really, yes?
All right.
You all work together, really, to...
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes. And of course, Sylvia never spoke to her mother again, and never were friends again, although she wrote a book about her mother.
No, that's rather
She's
sad.
She's written about a dozen books.
Yes, yes.
And because she used to tell me everything. We were friends right up to 1957, right, when she left England for Ethiopia.
She used to come and see you, did she? I
mean, oh, yes.
Did she?
Mm. Yes. And I went to her.
Did you?
Yes. Well, that's went on, you see, the campaign. Mm. When that was over, we got the vote, 1980, at 30 years of age.
Yes, yes. So you got the vote then, didn't you?
Yes. Yes. Mm. And we were granted the vote anyway, at 30. So she moved from 400 Old Ford Road. And she took a cottage, you wouldn't know, on the edge of Epping Forest, Essex, opposite the Horse and Wells Inn and public house, you know, it's a landmark, right opposite. You get off the bus from the main road and you go up a grass verge and there's her cottage. She turned it into a refreshment shop, but she had to get a living, see. And she put, ye old red cottage, and tables inside, tables outside with umbrella shades, all colours, you know, the very picturesque. And she did well. Nobody knew she was. And I don't know, I don't think anybody ever knew. But people go into the forest like weekends, you yes. see, in the summer. Mm. She did well. Mm. I can't tell you how long she was there. I used to go and help her a lot because she couldn't afford to pay. She got a woman now and again, but they used to not, they were dishonest.
Yes, I see.
Couldn't trust them, you see. So I used to go and help. And one of my sisters used to go. When I couldn't go, she used to go. And she used to say to me, when I see you get off the bus, I breathe freely. Because she could do some writing, you see.
Ah, yeah, she wanted to do writing then.
Well, of course. So, eventually from there, let me see, in 1929, she was living at Charteris Road, Woodford. She'd left, given up the cottage and all that, and in a residential part then, you see. You know, Woodford Station, as you come out, turn left, and that's Charteris Road, and she lived at number 3 opposite, called West Dean. And so that's where she lived for the rest of the time. And she used to come and see me, and I used to go and see her. Oh yes, we were friends, you see, we remained friends all the time. My husband used to, we had a lovely garden, you see, and if he sent for plants, and they came from the country, a new lot of plants, and then he left, he used to say, I'll go down and put them in Sylvia's garden, yeah, see.
So you knew her really very well.
Oh yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, and we used to do that. Well, then of course when she went to live in the house, we only visited her, I see. Didn't have to do anything. But one day, 1935, I think it was, the Emperor of Ethiopia had to leave his country.
That's right, yes.
I think it was...
when the fascists were fighting.
Yes, that's it. Mm. So she took them in because when Mussolini bombed them and they were defenseless, she took up the cause to bring the attention of the world to the injustice, bombing Ethiopia, a defenseless country, because they wanted expansion. Mm. So she was writing articles all, and when he had to fly from there with his family, she took them in at Charteris Road.
Did she really? Good.
Yes, they were there for a time.
I didn't know that.
I know my husband went down, went to Sylvia's to take some flowers, some plants, and she had a maid, a Danish maid. They used to give free service to learn a language. And she's a very nice young person. So she opened the door and she said, oh, Mr. Barnes, says her. He said, who are those coloured people in the garden? He saw them there, you see. Oh, Mr. Barnes, it's the Emperor. You know, that was a main thing. The emperor? He says, I'm emperor, because my other is comical, you know. Never dreamt, you see. And they were there some time until the government found them a place in South Wales. In the meantime, the daughter, Princess Soraya, something like that, she took up nursing in Charing Cross Hospital.
Did she?
And eventually she died.
Over here?
I don't remember where she went to, because when they went back, I don't remember the date or... But I never kept in contact. And I forget, Sylvie might have told me, I forget. But she died, see? And, well, that's how things went on and on.
Did you see her with Richard? Because Richard was born in...
1929, or something
like
that.
How did she cope with Richard? Was she... Did
you? Well, he was a nice little boy, when he used to write me a note, dear Mrs. Barnes, please come and have tea with me. Well, he's in Ethiopia now. He's a professor in Ethiopia.
Yes. I wondered if she was good at bringing up her children or whether it was rather a nuisance to her to have
well,
this young
baby. You see, she really wanted a child for experience to write about. And I met this man, but I had no idea until it happened. I did see him in the garden when I used to go down there, and I never asked questions. I thought he was some kind person helping out in the garden, you see what I mean? But she came to me in 1929, she called on me, excuse me, she said, well, she said, I had no idea, I never noticed the thing. She said to me, I'm going into the London hospital to have a child. I was shattered. You know, she said, Pethick Lawrence, he's a life governor of the London, has made all arrangements. So I couldn't say, I never said a thing. But I was so surprised, although I was in constant contact with her, I never noticed anything. You wouldn't, of course, you know, so many other things, and I never noticed anything. Anyway, it happened. Richard, that's a nice boy. And I used to go down and I had to have tea with him, you know. But when he started school, I didn't see him anymore.
You're not in contact with him now? I mean,
no, but when she died, he came to London from Ethiopia. And I still belonged to the Suffragette Fellowship. I had a notice, the Caxton Hall, it was our campaigning ground, all campaigning.
St. Irwin's Hotel. St. Irwin's Hotel. It's where they meet, isn't it?
The Caxton Hall.
Yes, yes.
And so I went to a meeting there. And who was it that was in the chair? One of the old suffragettes.
Grace Rowe, was it?
I think Grace it was, Rowe. Yes, one of them.
Or Marion Lawson?
No. Anyhow, I didn't know. A fine woman, yes. Because they belonged to Mrs. Pankhurst's lot.
Yes, yes.
See?
Different from these.
But they're different to the poor people in the East End. Well, she said, before we start business, she said, I have news for them, for you. She says, we have with us today Dr. Richard Pankhurst and his wife, who are in London from Ethiopia on a visit. Of course, I'm looking round, you see. I'm looking round, I couldn't see him. The hall was full of people, full of women. And when the meeting was over, There's a press officer, they always had a press officer there. I'm standing in the aisle, like, coming out, looking round. All of once he's coming towards me. He recognised me, you see. Yeah. And so, almost nice to meet him. And he introduced me to his wife, charming girl, very nice. And so, we had a chat. When we came out, I had a chat. And he was here, I think, on some business. They were going back. And I asked him, would they come and have lunch with me? But something happened, he never happened. Mm. You know, never came
so
off.
So he knew you anyway?
Oh, yes, he recognised me.
Did he really? Mm.
Then, after that, I had the Ethiopian Observer that Sylvie used to be the editor. Mm. And he took over. Mm. And it was his first issue. He sent me from Ethiopia.
Did he?
But I couldn't send back because I didn't know where to, the address, like.
I've got his address, actually, if you want it ever. I mean, I can.
Well, now I've had an American couple here who was in Ethiopia when Sylvia was there.
Oh, yes.
And she told me he's a professor of Ethiopia University, because
right,
I didn't know what he was.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not in touch. I'm too old now to.
That's interesting. Do you actually know who the man was? I mean, who his father was?
Well, his father, Correa, name of Correa, Mr. Correa, he was an Italian.
Was he?
Yes. And he was a writer, and he left Italy because of Mussolini.
Ah, I see. So it was all connected with that.
Well, I think, if I remember rightly, I think he would like to have married Sylvia, but Sylvia had plenty of offers before, she had no time. Mm. But this time, you see, I think that the campaign was over, he would have married her, but whether he had commitments or, you know.
Maybe she didn't want to marry.
No, well, had she, what she told me after Richard was born, because we used to be close friends, she said, well, she said, I said, you know, what about. I asked, I want to know how he came about. She didn't marry him. She said, my dear, she said, if I were to marry, I forget his Christian name, Mr. Corian. She said, he is a refugee from fascism. And I'm a socialist. The government would would deport both of us to his country. We'd be shot. Mm. That's what she told.
Did she?
Mm. Would happen, wouldn't it?
I suppose it would, yes, that's true.
See?
Yes, yes, I hadn't thought of that. She was trying to write books at that time, wasn't she? Because she was writing her big book on the suffragette.
Oh, yes, she's written. She used to write articles for, you know. Oh, she was a marvellous person. The marvellous person in the world, what she did, and bravery, you know, a brave man who would never beat her.
Mm. Well, she used to go on the thirst strike and sleep
oh,
strike
she,
as well, didn't she?
Nothing deters her. Mm. And so, of course, that's what she told me. She said, we'd be deported and shot. Mm. Mm. And said, the government here would only be too pleased to get rid of me.
I see. Well, then that's marriage would be a mistake. Then,
yes. See.
Yes.
So, and that's yeah. That's the history of the. Yes. But oh, she was.
Was she good in the house? Did she manage her house
well? Not very much. but she had different people, but they weren't interested. one of them to call her utensils. The first week she was there, because she used to have a study in the house where she was in Charteris Road, and she used to be in her study a lot. And she came out for a meal, you see. Well, when I went down there, she said, "Miss Barnes, we never use Christian names." And Miss Barnes, she says, "You know where the larder is? I've got to get an article by 5 o'clock. So I'll be in my study. I mustn't be disturbed. And just get anything out. Have it ready on table at 5 o'clock for tea, see?" She said, "All right." So she said, you can cook if there's anything you fancy like. There's bacon, eggs, tomatoes, all sorts. I'll leave it to you." I thought, I went to Saucepan Cupboard, not one left. And they were all new when she went to the house.
And they'd just been taken by this?
Been taken, but the woman was only there a week. Oh, I don't know.
What did she say when?
Well, of course, I couldn't disturb her, because she said, "I must be disturbed, I'll leave it to you, you know where everything is." But I just got a cold tea, see. But before 5 o'clock, there was a ring at the front door. I opened the door, said, "Miss Pankhurst." I said, "Oh," I said, "she's not available at the moment." "Isn't she? Well, I'm coming in to disconnect the telephone, for the bill hasn't been paid." See? He put his foot in the door, I couldn't shut him out. So I had to go a gentle knock on her door. I said, "Oh," I said, "somebody here." She went to the door. She said, "Yes. I've come to disconnect the telephone because the bill has been... "You'll get your money, go away." It took me and she pushed him out, shut the door. It wasn't that she wouldn't pay the bill, she just
didn't want to be disturbed then.
No, but she had that time or something. Mm. "You'll get your money, go away, it's not convenient." And she shut the door. Oh, I'll never forget that.
Then did you tell her about the saucepans that had gone?
Oh yes, yeah. She said, "Oh dear, they were new not long ago." She said, "Oh dear. It's only that woman's been here. And she never came anymore. She was supposed to come." Oh, they done some dirty tricks to her, because some women were prejudiced. You see, women having votes, they're still... You couldn't trust anybody.
Yes.
Yeah. And she was a woman from the convent.
Was she really?
Yes, she thought she'd be honest. Anyway, that's what... Oh, there's so many things.
I suppose she wasn't interested in housework or anything like that.
Well, she was full up with writing and that, you see. And the housework, well, she... Nothing much.
Did she take a pride in the house at all? And did she
I couldn't tell you.
Did she have nice furniture? I mean, your
house...
Oh,
no, she had useful things, everything for use, but... nothing outstanding, no. Elaborate, things like... she lived for writing, you know, for doing writing books and articles. And at 5 o'clock every day, a messenger on a red bicycle used to call for the article for the paper. And... when she left England, 1957, it was like losing one of the family.
So you really were very attached.
Yes.
To her. Did she write to you? I mean, did you have letters?
Well, you see, We were bombed out in 1944. And I lost a lot of, we lost our home and everything. I lost a lot of valuable letters and that.
That's a shame.
But, see? And, of course, I heard, like, afterwards, but I lost things that I valued so much.
What a shame. Did she never write to you from Ethiopia? When?
Well, you see, when she went to Ethiopia, she, it was all new, and
she was busy, I suppose, was she?
Busy, and, well, I suppose, I can't remember whether she wrote. She did send letters, but not regular, not no. Eventually. Mm. When she died, Richard sent me the Observer. Mm. So, anyway. Oh, she used to send me a telegram. Meet me without fail outside Kingsway Hall, 7 o'clock this evening. And I know two or three times I had a council committee to attend. I couldn't fail her. Mm. I didn't know what. So I'm waiting outside Kingsway Hall in the city, 7 o'clock. I'm there, 2:45. And I said to the somebody inside the entrance, sitting at the table, like, I says, Miss Pankhurst arrived. Miss Pankhurst? What do you mean? I thought, oh, well. So I went outside looking for her. Presently, she just got off the bus. She started waving. Then she got up to me. She said, here, she said, take these. I had no time to ask or anything. Take these, a bundle of leaflets, and give them out to people inside. I said, all right. Thinking it was all right, you see. But it was something against the workers, a meeting of the elite.
Oh, I see, yes.
And I didn't know what it was, you see.
Yes.
And of course, I'm giving the. She came along and she said, come along, come in. So we went in, and when the meeting started, she was given these. She went and sat down, told me to give them out, please. She went and sat down. When the meeting started, I could see they were all different to our class. I couldn't make it out. I didn't have time to inquire. So the chairman made his opening remarks, and then she got up. You could hear her voice, you know, she had a clear, loud voice objecting to all what was going to happen. And of course, the stewards came and bundled us both out.
When was that, Mrs. Barnes? When was that? Was that not the suffrage period, but after that, was it?
After. Yes. I never knew, you know. So, when I went home and I told my husband, he says, well, if any time you don't turn up, I know you're in prison.
So you must have had a lot of trust in her just to do what she said like that. I mean, you must.
Well, of course, she wouldn't do anything. It was a fight all the time, you see.
And you're a fighter too.
Yes, and you've got to be prepared to give your life, otherwise.
Yes.
It's marvellous, she was.
Could I go back to your first meeting when you first joined the women's movement? Who were the people speaking? Do you remember? Do you know who they were?
Oh, I couldn't tell you because
they were just women in the
movement. Oh, they're just women interested, and they were quite, what shall I say? People knew. Responsible people.
Educated people.
Educated, and they weren't young, and they weren't old.
Mm.
they were stable people, people of substance in the movement. See? But of course, these people I met like afterwards, but you're one of many, and you don't, it's like you belong to some big organization. You know the immediate, but you don't know.
No.
See, and in any case, I've never kept a diary.
No,
I've never
no, it doesn't matter. I just wondered if you knew them afterwards, you know.
I heard of them afterwards, see, but those you mentioned in the letter, Grace Rowe and all them, they belonged to...
They were in the WSPU, weren't they?
They were not with us.
No.
They were
no.
with the, Mrs. Pankhurst.
Mrs. Pankhurst, yes. But they got hold of you after the meeting then, and you said you joined, did you? And they told you where to go to.
Oh, well, they didn't tell me where to go to. They just took my name and address and they sent me a notice.
Ah, I see, yes.
The usual way. Like.
So you went home with your shopping, did you, after
that? Yes.
And what did your family say when you got home?
Oh, I never told my father, told my mother.
Because your mother was dead then, wasn't she? She died by then.
She died in 1910, but this was before that, the
oh,
meeting,
was it?
Yes.
Oh, I see, yes, I didn't realise that.
No, that was before that.
Mm. So, what did you told your mother, did you, about it?
I told her what she said, well, she didn't say anything. I didn't tell her I'd given her name and address, I just didn't say anything. Mm. When the notice came, I said, I'm going to the meeting to that. She said, all right.
She didn't object to it?
No. I didn't say a lot, you see, to them. In case they objected, now I was afraid that I wouldn't be allowed to go.
But your mother wasn't in favour of women's votes then?
Oh, yes.
Oh, was she?
Yes, she says, I think women, it's time they had the vote, you see. Oh, yes. She didn't say anything against.
What about your father?
Oh, I don't think he ever knew.
But you say your sister helped a bit as well. Did you?
Yes,
did your sisters join then? You had one sister, did you?
Yeah, well, you see, I've got a sister living round the corner in Cotswold Gardens. And she's 72. And she never done anything in the movement. She's like... not interested in any particular, but the one who used to help Sylvia, younger than her, she's 69, she lives at Harrow. And while she was single, she went to help Sylvia when I couldn't go, or, you know, often.
She must have only been a girl then, wasn't she? I
yes.
Mean, quite young.
Yeah, yes. Mm. Yes. Mm. Yes.
What about your brothers, Mrs. Barnes? Were they in favour of
it? I used to laugh. Because I lost my oldest brother 18 months after Mother died. He was 19. And would have been 20 in a few weeks' time. And then there was one who was 14. And the one 3 years old when Mother died, well, of course they grew up and they didn't know much about it, see.
So your two brothers, did they tease you or what?
And they're all gone now, my brothers. There's three of us. There's me, the eldest, my sister around the corner. By the way, her husband, my brother-in-law, comes nearly every evening for an hour or so.
Does he? That's nice.
Yeah, very nice. He's a customs officer.
Is he?
Yes. And my sister used to come up the stairs. She's got arthritis in the knees, and she can't do the stairs, so she phones me a lot.
Does she?
See?
Oh, good, yeah.
And only round the corner, Cotswold Garden. But my sister used to help Sylvia. She's more like me. interested in the same as I.
More of a rebel.
Yeah, a rebel, yes. And she lives at Harrow.
What did she do for Sylvia, your sister?
Hmm?
What did she do for Sylvia? What sort of things did she do?
Who?
Your sister in Harrow.
Oh, well, when she went to help her at the cafe, you know, the tea place.
Oh, yes, I see, yes.
See?
Yes, yes.
Otherwise, she didn't have to.
Yes.
It was, she needed help there. When I couldn't go, she...
Do you think...
Oh.
Or would you rather not?
I had to give up when we were left the barrack to come here, see? I had to give up the council, school managers.
You tell me what you did. I mean, you were in the movement.
Yes.
And then how did you get on the council then? What happened?
Well, I belonged to the Labour Party and they nominated me. They pushed me through.
And you became a Labour councillor
in
Bow, was that? Or
in Stepney.
I see, yes.
1934, we had an election. You know, Urban Morrison had been leader of the London County Council. And he was, I think, through him, he used to send us directions, you know, all the directives, what we, the programs. And we were so ready. The 1934, at the Borough Council election, we got Labour gained control of 24 boroughs out of 28 in the LCC area.
Mm. Was that when you were elected then?
Yes.
That was your first
1934.
Election? Yes, I
see. On our council, there were only two or three aldermen left. They had another 3 years to do. We controlled a lot. We took control. First time in history. The London County Council, they gained control of the London County Council, the Labour, the same time, 1934. And they've never gone back. As far as I know, all the barriers.
So what did you do, Mrs. Barnes, when you were on the council? You were just an ordinary councillor at first,
Oh, just an ordinary councillor.
Did you go on committees? I mean, did you...
Well, you have to be at committees, see. You choose a committee.
Yes.
The town clerk gives you a list of committees and you choose.
Yes.
And of course I was interested in housing and public health. And I always chose, every year we had a choice, like we're given a choice. And I always chose housing, public health. But I got four or five committees. They gave the committee, selection committee. They gave me more than I chose every time. See.
You were good on the committees, were you?
Yes, I was known to be a fighter.
Oh, well.
So they gave me other committees, general purposes, education and so on, and I can't remember now. And but I was always, the whole time, I made sure I get the house in a public health. My chief interest, and I always refused chairmanship because I didn't want to be tied.
Because of your family responsibility.
And not only that, other commitments, you see, but I became vice chairman of public health. I didn't mind that. And vice chairman of the library, you see. I said, well, that doesn't happen very often, so it's all right. And I also formed a cooperative women's guild.
Did you?
Before the war.
Did you? What was that to do?
I was in the cooperative political movement as well, because they're sister movements, you see.
Yes, yes.
And I formed the Women's Guild, Cooperative Guild. It's educational, you see.
To educate women about
the things,
and things,
yes.
Yes, yes.
And, but when the war came along, it was all finished, because you couldn't carry on. And then, you see, we got bombed out. And
that was in 1944.
We got bombed out at the end of the war, 19th of July 1944. The war was over the following spring.
So were you still a councillor then? And did you carry on as a councillor?
Yes, no, I was still a councillor.
How long did you go on for, Mrs. Barnes?
I resigned in 48.
Did you?
I could show you, I'll show you, you've got time.
Let's see, yes.
And I was on the school managers and other committees outside the council politics,
were you?
Yes.
Were you? You were interested in education?
I was interested in anything that was to do with community,
yes,
see?
Yes, yes.
Like, I was challenged once. I was holding a meeting, open air. We used to have to, in the beginning, open air meetings.
For the cooperative thing?
The Labour.
I see, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Years ago it was street corner meeting, see? Mm. You don't see that for years now.
No.
But I was challenged about, I mentioned the community, you see. And so, he thought he challenged me. And he said, you're a communist. I said, well, any objection? See, I said, I haven't said I was, but how do you say that? You mentioned the community. I said, why shouldn't I mention community? You're one of them, I said. You know, and they all laughed, see. I used to have challenges, you know. But
you obviously believe in giving as good as you get.
I was old.
Can you, when you went, you remember after the meeting, you went to Bow, didn't you, to Ford, Old Ford Road, to see Sylvia. To sign on.
Yeah.
What was she like to you? How did she treat you when you came to join the movement?
Oh, giving us plenty of pep, you know, talks. Mm. Mm. Building us up to courage and that, you know. You could, if you knew Sylvia, lots of stuff. Mrs. Pankhurst worked hard for her side. I mean, she did wonderful work for the women, but not for the working women.
No,
see?
No.
And she was marvellous, you see, in her activities. Sylvia was, she was just same, more so. She didn't care for anybody. It was her object, and she carried, tried to get the object she.
You say you did some chalking of pavements. What was that like?
Well, you had to do it. Part of the take your turn. I didn't always do it. If I happened to be there, she said, well, better get some chalk, some of you, and go around the pavement so-and-so.
So you'd run along the pavements, would
you? You couldn't advertise the meeting, only on the pavements.
Because it saved money, I suppose, to do it on the pavements.
One way, one reason, and another reason, nobody would take the
poster down.
No.
So did people make rude remarks when you were chalking the pavements?
At first, but not when they got to know Sylvia in the East End. They adored her, as I say. Then never, it was, she was a wonder. There was never such a time for wonder and excitement that she caused. She was like God. if she was about there. Oh, Sylvia, see?
Did you go on the processions across London?
Many times.
Did you?
I've seen Sylvia on a stretcher when she's been hunger striking in prison. And she's not supposed to be there, but she insisted on being taken. And men joined her. As many men joined as women in the East End. And they carried her on a stretcher. And I remember the police took her off us, on the way. They rearrested her. And I could see the men fighting like the devil. Trying to, to stop them taking her. She was manhandled, you see, of course. And, one march was on a Sunday or Saturday, and we got ready and we started. On the way, other people joined, it made it perhaps 2 miles long. And we had Lansbury had a friend, and he was a Reverend Wills. And he got two or three musical young men with instruments. And so he led our procession, our march, with these, like a band, see, leading the march. So when the band came along, of course all the people come to the doors and look at it. Well, when we got to Whitehall, they arrested Sylvia. She told us, "I'm sure to be arrested," she said. "However you fight, they'll get me. I want you to carry on." There was a deputation to the Essex Commons. It must have been in a week, the deputation. See. And when you get to Whitehall, the deputation to turn off Whitehall, before you face the police, Scotland Yard, turn off Whitehall down a side street, and you'll be in Parliament Square while the police are trying to stop you, see? And that's what happened. That was an idea, wasn't it?
Very good idea. did you enjoy the processions? Were they good fun?
It was the people were out looking and we liked it, and we were full of vim, see? And so we heard, of course the procession was long, we heard that afternoon that, Reverend Wills had been taken by the police and taken to the Serpentine Night Park and he was,
locked up?
He was locked up, but they dipped him in the water.
Ducked in the water?
Yes.
Good Lord. Yeah. By the police?
By the police.
Goodness me.
Oh, he had a rough handling in the Serpentine. They took it. Oh, they used to, with their batons like this, right and left. A lot of our suffragettes died through it. Yes, they didn't.
So when the procession was over, did you come back in a procession into the East End as well?
No, we didn't come. We split up. And then we all went their different ways, finding a place where to have a cup of tea. And then come home by bus, see. Yes, but
they must have been great, great events.
Oh, it was adventurous. It was something that we weren't doing it for. We defied everybody, That was the spirit.
And you had banners, I expect, and
all
flags.
Oh, banners, yes, banners.
And music.
Yes.
Did you sing?
If they played, the band played songs, I can't think of the songs now. I can only think of the red flag now.
You haven't told me when you got married, Mrs. Barnes. You got married after this, did
yes,
you?
Yes, 1919.
Your husband was, was he market gardener?
Oh no, he was a craftsman.
Was he? You say you had these flowers, these plants.
Well, we had a lovely garden. We always at home, see?
I see.
He was, it was his hobby.
I see, yes.
Yes, see?
What was his craft? What was his trade?
Well, what is it? Precision engineering or something like that.
Was he?
Yes. And he was rather humorous man, you know, he'd make you laugh.
Like you.
And I wouldn't have got married. I never intend to get married. But he came to live with a neighbour. He'd been in the war, and he had no one, you see. So he lost his mother before he got back. And so he came to live with a neighbour of ours that used to live, used to be their neighbours where he came from.
See,
Stepney, but different part. Mm. And so these neighbours, this family, told him so much about me that he used to call and keep on calling to take me out, see, but I never went out anywhere with anybody. And I said, no, I said, I'm not interested in all that. He kept on and kept on, and that's it.
That's how it happened.
But I never was out with anybody like usually. I never had a life that young girls have go out. And I always been serious in such as politics.
Did you felt you had to look after your brothers and sisters, I suppose,
Yes.
That's very interesting.
To me, I can't tell which it is now.
Mm. Yes, I don't know which it would be. That could be.
That one.
Yes, I'm not sure, yes.
Well, I went to see Sylvie one day, and she said, the usual visit, and she said, my aunt, I've heard from my aunt, who lives in West End, Amersham Road, said she's got an upright piano she wants to get rid of. And so she asked Sylvia, if she was interested, like, with different... did she know anyone, a club, that would like to have it? Because she wanted to dispose of it. So she said, what about your Labour Club? I said, well, we've got an old one. I said, I think they would be pleased. She said, right, we'll go to see my aunt. So she went. We went along to Amersham Road, the first house. So when we got there, the maid opened the door, and she said, come this way. But Sylvia couldn't understand, because usually she'd go in and surround. And she took us in the side room, and wait, she said. So then presently, the maid brought in a tray with refreshments. And so Sylvia said, what's the matter? Is my aunt ill? What's happening? She said, just what? All at once, the aunt, she's a fine woman, walked in and embraced Sylvia. She said, oh dear Sylvia, she said. I knew, she said, that you were coming. She said, but your mother happened to call in, and I knew you didn't want to meet her. She'd just gone, you see. Because they didn't speak anymore after the quarrel, when she parted from them. And so after that, it was all right, see? And they send the piano to Marlene Labour Club, my club. I suppose they still got it, I don't know. I don't know anyone there left. Because I'm old and they're mostly... Yeah. I was young to them then, and all those I knew must be gone.
Was Sylvia upset about this relationship with her mother? I mean, was she sad
about... Well, because her mother said that she shouldn't go to the slum area and be as dirty as them in the area and all that. She never spoke to her mother again.
So. Did she ever say that she was sorry about it to you? I mean...
No, never. No. Because she thought that was very mean and nasty to say about human beings. She said... human beings are human beings, and you can't blame them for what they are, because they haven't had the opportunity.
He said, and you look down on them, but they're still human beings. So she was went to my home one time, summer Sunday, and she brought a couple of other old stagers with her. And we were talking in my front room. All at once there was a ring at the door, and I opened the door, and it was a friend, just ordinary people. He was a post supervisor or something, and was his wife. He was all right, but he said, we come, he said, to see my brother, but we got no answer because they didn't know we were coming, so we thought we'd drop on you. He said, oh, come in, that's all right, we had open house to our friends. So his wife had been a housemaid, you know, in the early days. And she thought she was a lady, she acted as, she wasn't very popular, but he was. So, of course I will. I said, oh, come in. I said, so he said, you got company? I said, yes, doesn't matter. I said, come on. So the front room door was open as we came through the hall. So I said, oh, I introduced them. Well, his wife, when I said, this is Miss Banker, see, she withdrew her hand. See? So I said, come along outside. So I took her in the dining room, both of them, and her husband told her off. I said, look, you can't stop. I'm sorry. You insulted a friend in my house, so you must go. So the husband says, serve you right, says, you ought to know, he says, he carried on. But I couldn't have them there, could I?
No.
So I went in the front room and I said, I'm ever so sorry. Oh dear, don't worry about that, she said. These people to be pitied. So she took it all right, but it wasn't nice for me.
No, no.
And
no,
I never, no. They never came again.
Why did she take her hand away, do you think?
Because she was prejudiced, like the lady she worked for years ago, prejudiced against votes for women,
yes.
See. She thought she was a lady, she was showed off airs and graces.
And she knew Sylvia was...
yeah, of course she knew. Yes, well, she knew about it because we talked about her. When I used to come to tea Sunday afternoon, and he was very... very good. I mean, he was all right. He'd talk about it. And
it's very bad manners, that, isn't it?
And it was very bad manners. I said, you've insulted my friends in my own place. You must, can't stay. So the husband said, right, it serves you right. That's right. Because they called me and he says, Annie is right.
Did you ever have a career, Mrs.
No,
Barnes? I mean, were you
never,
a housewife?
I never had to earn my living.
No,
never.
When you got married you just looked after the house.
Yes,
did you?
But I never earned a penny in my life.
Did you really? Yeah. So you had lots of time for the council work.
Yes,
really.
Yes.
Yes, yes. You're 4'10", are you, Mrs. Barnes?
Oh, I don't know.
Yes. Oh, yes, it's all about... I think I want to ask you, Mrs. Barnes, what happened in the First World War? Were you a pacifist in the First World War, or what did you, what line did you take?
Well, we're against war, but we didn't do anything. I mean, I had my brother in it.
Did
he
you?
Had to go.
You weren't against the... You didn't sort of oppose the war, then?
Well, we don't believe in war. But what can you do? You got. He had to go. And, well, he was only 18, you see.
Yeah. Did you do any war work? I mean, did you go in the
no,
munitions?
No, we stopped to that. We stopped the suffragette.
Yes.
The last,
but you didn't go into a factory or
oh,
anything like
no,
that?
Oh, no, I never.
You were still looking after your father, I suppose, weren't you? And your
yes,
your
I was
and
at home.
Yes.